morning. The House Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 26, 2012. Time is 8:04. Present are Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick, and excuse our Feige and Representative Kawasaki. Thank you for being here. We do have a quorum. I would like to remind everybody to turn cell phones off, spare yourself the embarrassment, and we have a quorum, and we have three items on the agenda. Our first order of business is an address by Kara Heights from Alaska Teacher of the Year, and then SB 199, Vocational Education Funding Factor, and SB 170, Vocational Educational Counseling in Schools. Kara, thank you for being here. Wonderful to have you. We're honored. If you want to come forward, please. I had a chance to be at the celebration in Cordova where Kara was honored for being Teacher of the Year. I told her, I said, Kara, I've never even been nominated. I was the best teacher in Toledo. Of course, I was the only one. So thrilled to have you. Please introduce yourself for the record and feel free to give your presentation.
Excellent. Thank you. My name is Kara Heights, and I'm the 2012 Alaska Teacher of the Year. I am a 7th through 12th grade science teacher in Cordova, Alaska, and I would like to speak to you today about myself, my students, and the future of education in this great state. My topic today is the transformation from static to dynamic education. When one looks up the definition of static in the dictionary, these are some words that appear. I thought about how this applies to education and what a static classroom might look like. And these are the words that came to my mind. I then envisioned what this might look like in the classroom. I found the image on the left from a teacher website out online, and I think that the image on the right speaks to all of us. We've all been through that type of education in the past, with the end product unfortunately being the forgetting.
Yes.
But this image was really what I think represents a static education in my mind. And I think the image in the foreground is just as important as the image in the background. In contrast, when one looks up the definition of dynamic in the dictionary, these are some words that come up. I again applied this to, or translated it to, the classroom setting, and these are the words that came to my mind. How would this look in the classroom? And this is what I envisioned. Students on the left work with remote operated vehicles that they've created through a challenge course, while students on the right explore organisms under a microscope that they've brought up from a benthic environment. These students look like they might be off task, but yet they are actually using their mobile device to understand algebra. These students are using their laptops while they understand diffusion and osmosis through a cell lab. And this image speaks for itself, in which Simeon is experiencing the true power of air pressure on the body. If you've never tried this, I highly recommend it. Over the past 11 years, at the core of my philosophy has been a constructivist style of teaching, in which learning occurs as students are actively involved in the process of meaning and knowledge construction, building on prior experiences rather than passively receiving information. It fosters critical thinking and creates motivated and independent learners. To achieve this, I have endeavored to create hands-on learning environments that encourages a student's natural curiosity about the world. Such as here, one of my seventh graders shares the wonders of bugs and microscopes with a kindergartner. Or here, in which my seniors and I share the amazement of elephant toothpaste with fifth graders. Over the past 11 years, I have also fostered learning from the natural environment. I think the best learning occurs when students can personally relate to their subject matter and see that what they're learning is important. I hope to instill the value of our natural environment in my students, and that we'll take a community working together to ensure our resources are sustained into the future. A fact I feel was imprinted on Jenny when she found herself hands deep in Exxon Valdez oil on a beach in Prince William Sound. In 2006, when I was introduced to the one-to-one initiative in Cordova, and my students each had a digital tool in their hand, I realized if I was to be a guide to students into the 21st century, that I needed a paradigm shift. I began the transformation from my classroom, from a static classroom to a more dynamic classroom. I built wikis and blogs for all my classrooms and entered the Web 2.0 world with my students. Over time, I've been able to shift from being a full-time lecturer to a coach and facilitator. The individual access to the internet has opened up a wealth of visual resources to supplement the students' learning and make it come alive. Students spend a lot of time on their own or with partners or teams exploring content via the laptop and discuss with each other what they've learned. Let me show you how this transformation looks in the classroom and for the students. Before you, a little hard to see, is an old textbook black and white lab for anatomy. Students walk around the room, look at images, and fill in one correct answer. Here is the transformed lab, posted on our class wiki. Students use their laptops, their cell phones, or cameras to photograph what they think will demonstrate the planes and sections of the body. And they get creativity in their choice of that demonstration. They then create a smart build video with their partners to demonstrate their learning and post it on their team wiki page they create. Here, a seventh grade student not only shares a little bit about himself, but gets to demonstrate his creativity and knowledge in his lab reports and other science assignments on his individual wiki page. Each student in all my classes has an individual page to post their information. Blogging also occurs in all my science classes with ongoing science news project. Students find current, interesting, and relevant science news articles and create posts to share what they have learned. They then comment back and forth to each other. For the first time, I have students really excited about news topics and writing about them to share them with myself and with their peers. My marine biology students work on a year-long monitoring project, monitoring the growth of organisms in the harbor, as well as water and weather changes that may impact that growth. They utilize their laptops to publish their data online each month. Additionally, this year we're working with two other science classrooms, one from Valdez and one from Maine. The students are using their data to compare and analyze ocean differences in the North Pacific versus the Atlantic and are actively collaborating across the country with each other via Google Docs and Skype. Finally, I have a strong relationship with the Copper River Watershed Project and my seventh grade classes. 3 years ago, we adopted a local pond to monitor throughout the year, and due to the students' effort, had the pond nominated and accepted into the state anadromous waterways catalog. This helps identify and offer protection to our spawning salmon habitats. Each class has continued and further developed monitoring, sharing their chosen final projects through graphs that they create on their laptops, trash art sculptures, radio podcasts that they produce on their own using their technology, newspaper articles, or even videos with the community about the importance of this habitat. Overall, this digital transformation has allowed me to utilize technology to support pedagogy and empower my students to further develop their 21st century skills. Melding constructivist theory with digital learning has helped students create authentic learning environments for our students to better prepare them for their future. A future in which the jobs we are preparing for them for do not yet exist. We are on the precipice of education reform in the U.S. Our schools are not producing globally competitive citizens, and there is a call for much needed change. In our classroom, in order to go from static to dynamic, our students need a variety of up-to-date learning resources. They need creativity in their knowledge acquisition and demonstration. They need higher level thinking skills and definitely a global perspective. How will they achieve this? They need the correct tools. And today, this means one-to-one access to technology. Like any good reform movement, success depends on successful implementation. Sticking a piece of technology in the hands of students is not enough. I pictured the full picture more of a building block. For the success, a school-wide culture and vision for access and use is needed. It entails functional and true broadband connectivity, current hardware and software, and it must include time for teachers to learn to use technology and incorporate it into their own curricular goals and continue to work through collaboration for sustainable professional development. Lastly, it entails access to continual technical support. We all have the ability to learn. We expect our students to be successful learners and enter a global society. Yet this is the static classroom that we are sending them to in our state and all across the United States. We as educators, policymakers, and parents cannot guide them in their learning without being learners ourselves. Let us learn together how to be the most effective teachers, leaders, and supporters. Ben Franklin once said, "Without continual growth and progress, such words as improvement, achievement, and success have no meaning." You would probably never think of sending your child or yourself to a physician who has not kept up on the newest information and most effective procedures over the tenure of her career. Wouldn't you rather send your child here? Let us not fail the children in our classrooms the same way. Let us be the role models for students as lifelong learners and push for growth and progress so that we can truly foster success. I am just one example. We have the opportunity to create dynamic classrooms across our state. Reform begins with a transformation. Let us start the transformation at the state and district level with the vision of using technology as a positive means to develop globally competitive graduates from our schools and continuing support for educational technology. Thank you, and I look forward to your comments and questions.
Thank you, Karen. We, for the record, we've been joined by Representative Sissner and Representative Pruitt. But you haven't lived until you've dipped the pigtail of the girl in front of you in the inkwell in your desk. When I went to school, we did have those inkwells. Questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been struggling for several years trying to figure out how to improve education. We've supported and gone with, tried to encourage theme-based or project-based education. We're dealing with looking at standards and how to change those standards for expectation or not. And it appears, and we've also been working on technology whether it's one-to-one or it's iPads or iPod touches or what. But it appears from what you're presenting here that the change is more a cultural change within the teachers and administration of how teaching takes place. And so I guess, I'm glad you're Teacher of the Year. How receptive are the broad width of teachers and administrators that you've dealt with across the state towards this? I mean, it's really a revolution to change from a static to a dynamic situation. So how receptive has that been, and what is it that the legislature needs to do or can do to facilitate such?
Representative Seaton, through House Chair. I think that, well, first I'll answer the receptivity of the culture. Culture, I think, for anyone is change is difficult, but I think that showing the need for change for our students and the positive effect of the change is a start. And I think that that in my experience through Cordova and through my work across the state with ASTE, that it's slow, but it works. We've had teachers who, when we first got the laptop systems, were not really sure of how that could affect their classroom or impact their classroom. And over time, with working with positive teacher leaders and a supportive administration, they've started to see the benefit for their students. And the students have started to express the benefit to them. So I think you're right, establishing that culture is key. But in order to establish that culture, I think schools need to understand, or schools and legislatures need to understand that there needs to be that support of the system. There needs to be the access to technology, as well as how can we blend that with the standards that we're using, that we're adopting, and meet the successful, or have successful students. So it's not just one thing. We either fund technology or we focus on the standards. I think we need to meld that all together for a picture of success for our students. So I think as legislatures, you can see it as more of a big picture, that if we're trying to produce successful, competitive graduates, that they need all of this support, a complete picture, and support down to the administrators so that the teachers can work on that positive cultural change in their schools.
Follow up? I guess my more critical question is, how do we, other than, I mean, we're providing laptops, mm-hmm. we're trying to get technology, those things, but changing the culture within the school, and, I mean, been to lots of classrooms where there's computers in the classroom, but it's not a dynamic situation, right. It's still a static situation. How do you perceive us really aiding such a switch to a without interfering with the local decisions and education and things?
Good question. Representative Seaton through House Chair. I think that once the support is there, I think that a vision for change needs to come across not just at the district level, but that the teachers, the students, the administrators need to know that our legislators support that change. That we're all working towards a reform or a change. And so I think your voice is key as well. You're getting into the classrooms and getting into understanding what those students need. So it's not necessarily just funding, but that you're supporting that push for a vision of change, that you see that this is going to be a positive thing as well. I'm not sure if I'm answering that question, but I think that support is also key.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Quick comment, and then Representative Wilson, then Representative Sissener. But see, that you refer to pedagogy, and that's exactly what you're doing here. That's different, and that's certainly not something that we ever want to touch. I mean, that's certainly your domain.
Right.
And so I think his question is well phrased, is how can we help encourage this to happen? Because it's certainly, I stand in awe of what you're doing. I think that question really we need to keep asking that is how can we support that without meddling in what you are doing. So, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really commend you for what you've done. You can see kids' excitement, you know. And if there was like two things, I mean, educators overall have a tendency right now, and I think everybody in the state has a tendency to think that we've got tons of money and why not spend it? And we have some responsibilities that we have to look forward into the future a little bit too. And so we don't have an endless amount of money. So if we could just do, say, what would be, and I'm perceiving that maybe we should fund with some strings on it, that it has to go for certain things to kind of force schools into some of this. But if there was just two things that we could do, and that's all, what would be the two most important things you think we could do?
Representative Wilson through House Chair, I think I'd like a clarification in terms of funding. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay. well, I would say that funding teacher training in technology is key because I think that helps move the teachers forward in their culture. But also the having the access to technology in their hands. I think a lot of times we look at, well, we don't have enough money in our budget for this technology in addition to all our other things. But I think we have to be more creative in our in our look at that. For example, with iPads in education today, they're definitely a little more sustainable in terms of funding than our laptops, and they also can be a very powerful tool for replacing our textbooks, something that we're spending a lot of money on that are outdated in 1 year. So if I were to say those two important things would be continued one-to-one access in a more sustainable way through iPads or iTouches, in which students can still get their textbooks, their content, and you're not double dipping in terms of the textbook costs as well, and also the teacher training to help that cultural change, that vision of where we need to go, and that transformation will start.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Sisma.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry that I did not get the very first order presentation, but nonetheless, I can look at the, I can both hear it and look at your PowerPoint. The piece that I am very concerned about is the fact that Alaska is the largest state, by far the largest state. We're not the largest population.
Right.
We're a very small population. We're distributed across a fascinating place. I mean, the geography is wildly productive in terms of the possibilities for technology, the resources available, and really poverty-stricken in terms of the local ability to really develop that, which is the huge challenge. And that's an incredible challenge, and something that it's really wonderful to know that people like you are there, because I'm on the other end of all of this, and to know that you're there to work on it, very important. But each one of those schools, each one of those kids in each one of those schools come from a community, mm-hmm. and that community, first teachers or parents, and in those communities out further out, the first teachers were parents and the elders, and we don't have all of that really studied and figured out and have a way to make sure that those students really have the ability, bandwidth, all of those kinds of things to all of those different places. We're not there. We haven't done it. And that's one of the big challenges, because we have populations that go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering how you're bringing in community, because the kids can learn what they're going to learn, but emotionally, they're back home mm-hmm. eventually, and they're with their parents, even though they might be thousands of miles away. They're still with their parents and their culture. How do you see working that in the classroom with the technology?
Thank you for your question, Representative Sisna, throughout chair. I think that, I lived in the villages for a few years, and I was lucky enough to have access to technology there. The students didn't have a one-to-one access in their hands, but they were able to use the technology in the school. And I think that one of the important factors is always bringing in the community to the school. That's a really important step to seeing where that, how the kids are learning, where they're going into their future. I think bringing the community, the members, the parents, the elders into the school while the kids are using that technology or seeing how they can use it is a really important step, because you're not going to get a cultural change if you don't have the whole picture for the student, and that includes their families. In terms of access for the remote areas, I think that's where creativity comes. Until there is a time in which we can have a one-to-one unit in every student's hand across our state, then what can we do to bring them forward anyway? And I think that includes distance delivery options, where students can stay in their community, in their hometown, with their values and their cultures, but a vision of what it's going on in other schools across the state, whether it's through distance education or even video conferencing, where they're starting to open up and learn about the technology and how it can open up their lives and enrich their lives. So I think that's important. But I also think that technology can be used, and I hope I demonstrated this, in a variety of ways. You can still have hands-on learning and cultural learning while using that technology to enhance it. So for example, I have an elder coming into my classroom in a few weeks to teach my students students how to carve traditional halibut. And so we have that step, but yet at the same time, the students are going to be able to document what they're learning with video and podcast and audio, and then share that with the rest of our community. And I think that's a really important link of how can we take the past and bring it forward into the future using this technology.
Excellent answer, and hopefully you share it with the rest of the state of Alaska, Karen. Any other questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. In a dynamic classroom, I anticipate that classroom management is going to be key and is also going to be perceived differently by people coming into those classrooms. How much of the teacher training needs to focus on classroom management in a dynamic situation? Because I presume there's going to be quite different techniques and quite different expectations. Am I correct in that assessment, or are we just talking technology?
No, Representative Seaton, through House Chair, I would like to definitely say that you're right. There's a definite difference in style, but there, at the heart of any classroom management, I think, is getting to know your students and setting groundwork, no matter what type of teaching style you have. I think that developing what the role will be of the students and the teacher in the class and in a democratic classroom is very important first. And then once that is established, then the teaching technique should flow a little easier. However, you're right, in a dynamic classroom, it's definitely more mobile, more loud. Things are moving around a lot more. It's not every student in their class, only one person speaking at a time situation. So I think that that's something that teacher training should involve and entail. What are different ways these classrooms can look, and how do we handle those in different ways? And so I don't necessarily think that they need to be trained of how to handle the technology for the classroom management, how to handle a classroom management environment in which there's a lot of variety. And I think, again, if you have that beginning established, the beginning tone set for how the classroom should be, then that really handles a lot of variety of situations, dynamic, static, loud.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Kara, thank you. I'm just sitting here thinking, if we could just take you and the teacher of the year last year, whose real emphasis was on the getting arts involved, and maybe the last five teachers of the year, just let you design it for us and we follow you. That might be the best model we could ever have. But Kara, thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Dick, for letting me to be here and speak to you all today.
It's an honor.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to SB 199, Vocational Education Funding Factor, and I understand Senator Thomas is going to present, although it's Senator Kevin Meyer's bill, but Senator Thomas is going to present the bill to us, and please introduce yourself to the record, and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing SB 199. There are two bills here today, but actually SB 199 first, both enhance vocational education and counseling in Alaska. The first one before you is SB 199, is sponsored by Senator Kevin Meyer. He could not be here today, but since his bill is based on one I introduced last year, I'm here to speak to it. Research shows that vocational technical programs have consistently increased graduation rates nationwide and here in Alaskan schools. The ideal high school curriculum needs to incorporate both academic rigor and cutting-edge career preparation. Last year, Senate Bill 84 established a separate funding stream for vocational education. That bill passed unanimously out of the House and the Senate. At that time it was introduced, the committee thought that it was best if it limited the money to high schools. We knew it would not be a large pot of funds, and we wanted to get the best return on the investment. However, since then, we have heard from many school districts that have asked if we could change the bill to allow that money to be used in junior high school as well. Many shared with Seth that they did not want more money, but wanted simply to have the opportunity to use the money that they had for the students in the lower grades. Subsequently, Senator Meyer introduced SB 199, which allows the vocational education funds to be used for junior high school students as well as high school students. That bill is before you and essentially allows schools to expand their use of vocational education money. SB 84 proved to be very effective in increasing our ability to deliver vocational education to senior highs in Alaska, and I urge you to support expanding it to cover junior high students as well. Senator Meyer's aide, Edra Morledge, is here with me today to answer any questions you might have concerning this bill, and I'm also prepared to answer any that you might on the genesis of the bill. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the bill. Didn't see in the packet anything from school districts as far as support or opposition. Is that just going to be, is that going to be verbal today? Do you anticipate testimony?
I'm not sure who is going to testify. Maybe Edward could be, but we had a lot of support for it. Matter of fact, that was the purpose of the bill, was the request by school districts to do exactly that, to expand the use of the money. So, Edra, if you would allow her to respond, she has some information on that, but would be helpful.
For the record, Edra Morledge, co-aide to the Senate Education Committee. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we do have a list of several folks that are here, both in person and online, to testify, representing school districts and other stakeholders throughout the state.
Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here, Senator. So the bill, I'm looking at the fiscal note, doesn't have any additional funding attached to it, and you mentioned that school districts have not asked for more money, but what they've asked for is just the ability to move that money back and forth between junior highs and high schools. And I'm just curious if you think that maybe the lack of funding for a high school program or the ability to move it to a junior high program might mean a lack of funding for the high school program. Can you address that?
I certainly can, and I think I neglected to indicate that it was Senator Joe Thomas from District D in Fairbanks. I don't think I put that on the record, so I'll do it later rather than sooner. We questioned them to that degree regarding that situation. Most said that they thought they could handle it with just the money that they had, not a great deal of money, but a large enough infusion that some of them had to, prepare again. I'm sure down the road that might be something that people might rethink as we look at the importance of vocational education, obviously. But at least at this point in time, they felt that there was sufficient money to actually spread it into the junior highs, and some are actually co-located, so in some areas in particular, the smaller areas. So that was helpful then, and it would make it easier for them to use that money without excluding people that were right there in the same building.
Any other questions from committee? Okay, we do have people in the room who would like to testify. Carol Como. Is Carol here? Hey there. Morning, Carol.
Thank you, Representative Dick, members of the committee. I'm Carol Como. I'm the superintendent of the Anchorage School District, and we strongly support Senate Bill 199. In fact, it's one of our legislative priorities. Senator Thomas explained it very well. We have been very grateful for the infusion of current technical education funding, and it's made a big difference in what we've been able to do. But we've also been working on career pathways in our middle schools, and because of the language in the bill, the original bill, we have not been able to use that funding as our school board and our district would like to use it. So we asked Senator Meyer and the committee to look at this at the end of last session, but it was too late in the session to do the change. So we're strongly supportive of this and feel that it would just allow us that flexibility, and I think any district in the state would probably say the same. Thank you.
Any questions from committee? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Peggy Cowan. Good morning, Peggy. Identify yourself for the record, if you would.
I will. Chairman Dick, members of the committee, I'm Peggy Cowan, Superintendent of Schools for the North Slope Borough School District. And it's a pleasure and honor to speak with you today. I want to thank you all for working on behalf of the students of the state on this committee. My board has not taken a position on either of these bills. I'm speaking for the administration. But I echo the comments of the last two speakers. We appreciate you passing the VOCED funding factor last year. Vocational education is more expensive to offer than many academic areas, so a VOCED funding factor makes sense. Starting early in education is important. We know when we emphasize early childhood education, and starting early in career and technical education is also important. So this amendment makes sense so that we can allow flexibility for middle school. We start career pathways also in the North Slope Borough School District, and again reach down into the middle schools for those. Thank you for consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Thank you, Peggy. Also in the room we have Bruce Johnson.
Good morning, Chairman Dick, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and we have our seven position statements. One of them has to deals with career and technical education. And we look at it from a kindergarten through 12th grade perspective. So from that standpoint, I can clearly endorse the concept that's presented here, that we move this money down to the middle school level. We were very sensitive, as a group of superintendents in particular, to use this money based on the intent of the language. And the language was secondary, defined as 9-12. Or high school, rather. It wasn't secondary. It's now going to secondary, which includes the junior high. And so, because we want you to reinvest in us again, we'll use this money, we'll demonstrate how we're doing good things with this money, things are improving in vocational ed and career tech, and therefore this change is really necessary for many of our districts, and we would hope that you would support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Thank you, Bruce. We do have seven people in the room. Who have signed up, but nobody's signed up to testify. So if you'd like to, we'll make that available after we hear from off-net here. Suzanne Armstrong, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Please identify yourself and who you represent and give your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Dick and members of the Health Education Committee. For the record, my name is Suzanne Armstrong. I am the president of the Associated Builders and Contractors of Alaska. ABC of Alaska supports Senate Bill 199 as well as Senate Bill 170. And I'd like to thank you for the commitment and focus you have shown for improving and growing vocational technical education opportunities in our schools, beginning last year with the passage of Senate Bill 84 and continuing with Senate Bill 170 and 199 this year. As a member association that represents contractors and subcontractors in Alaska, we are constantly looking for solutions for key problems that plague the construction industry, which two of which are the high level of demand for skilled workers and an aging construction workforce. For the members of our association, we see the possibility of Senate Bill 170 and Senate Bill 199 is to start engaging Alaskan youth in grades 7, 9, and 11 about the opportunities that exist in the construction industry, as well as other vocational and technical career paths. Whether the educational opportunities exist through ABTECH or regional training centers or through registered apprenticeship programs, it is important that students are presented the information and encouraged to explore these career opportunities. ABC of Alaska in particular is committed to ensuring that the construction industry in Alaska is supplied with a qualified workforce that is ready and able to build the needs of our young state. Our registered apprenticeship program was started in 2001, and since then, over 200 apprentices have completed their apprenticeship program. Individuals have completed coursework and on-the-job training in electrical, plumbing, carpentry, sheet metal, HVAC, sprinkler fitting, electronic systems, painting, as well as glazing. ABC of Alaska actively participates in job fairs, speaking with secondary school classes, providing orientation and informational sessions on apprenticeship in the crafts and trades, in an effort to reach out and educate young Alaskans about the opportunities in the industry. We see 170 and 199 as a great complement to the efforts that are already undertaken by the industry to recruit and train a qualified workforce. You know, we believe that 170 and 199 will be a great start to educating young Alaskans about careers, not only the industry, in the construction industry, but also in other trades and professions. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Suzanne. Any questions from committee? Good. Rick Rios, are you online? If so, please identify yourself for the record and state your affiliation.
Thank you, Chairman Dick and members of the House Education Committee. My name is Rick Rios. I'm the Acting Director for CNTE for the Anchorage School District. I have 44 years of ELASTE experience as a vocational teacher, administrator, a private business owner, and community leader. I support all legislative actions that help citizens select and prepare themselves for lifelong contribution in their respective communities. Both of Bills 170 and 199 are such actions before you. The greatest contribution of a citizen is their lifelong work. Without career awareness and choices, citizens wander from job to job, low-paying jobs that require limited skills and no security. These people are, and these citizens are, the first in the unemployment lines. But when a person's work is concentrated in a single career area, then knowledge and experience are leveraged, and the contribution to the employers and the community is greater. Personal desire for more education and training increases, and their wages are higher. Our young people need this information and training now, and these bills will provide it. Education without career information and without career and technical training is one factor driving our students to drop out of schools even before they get to high schools. They're not motivated, and they don't see the relevance of their education. The 2010 Alaska Career and Technical Education Plan begins with a call for every student to have a personal learning and career plan, best known as a PLCP. The new 2012 Anchorage School District CP plan, soon to be available for public comment next Monday, will also call for every student to have a PLCP. Some say that middle school students, it's too early. The students don't know what they want to be at this early age. This may be true for many, but it isn't because students don't care. It's because we have denied them the proper information. Students don't know how about work and careers because we haven't taught them about work and careers. In Anchorage, we have found that students, when given career information, thrive in their education. Enrollment in our Construction Trades Academy and our Health Career Academy has seen a 5-time increase, and this is due largely to the partnerships with industry and leaders who are getting involved in the Career Guidance Program. It all started in 2004 with the legislative fund of the Career Anchorage Construction Academy. It started with you, the Alaska Legislature. I urge you to pass both these bills and, wherever possible, provide CT funding to ensure that every citizen of Alaska gets career information and guidance starting in middle school. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Any question from committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you. You used the acronym PLCP?
Yes.
And what does that stand for?
Personal Learning and Career Plan.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other question from committee? Okay. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess we often get the expectation that because someone plans early for a career that it's basically static and is necessarily going to stay there, and if they change their career plan somehow, there's been a loss. And it seems like career planning is a huge gain, even if one changes their career path. I mean, and so can you address that just for a little bit as to whether career planning is beneficial, even if someone ends up not pursuing that career or changing a year or two later?
Thank you, Representative Seaton, through the chair. I think that paradigm is something that's probably 20 or 30 or even 40 years old. When it wasn't career changes, they were job skill changes. Back in the 70s and 80s, people could earn a living on a skill in a particular job. That has changed. We are now not teaching specific job skills. We're teaching career skills and knowledge. So a person who is in a health career generally doesn't all of a sudden become a contractor. A person who's engineering all of a sudden doesn't go into aerospace. The career pathways are very, very broad and very, very open to multiple changes in your specific jobs. But I think, I believe that people stay within the same career pathway, and that is opening not to a single job, but to a multitude of areas, say in health careers or in engineering, or over in construction. They may go from accounting to management, or even to ownership of a company. That doesn't mean that they didn't start by building a house or by plumbing a building. I think we are teaching more about the broad career pathways of broad-scoped avenues rather than specific skills.
Excellent. Any Representative Kawasaki?
Thank you. I had a question. I know this deals mostly with the hands-on sort of workplace career and technical training, but I'm just curious what your school district does for K through 6, because I remember as a student going through and having a stack of cards, and you're supposed to push the metal thing through the cards. You guys recognize this? They probably don't do that anymore, but I remember doing that as probably a third grader, and at the end of the cards that were at the bottom of the stack would have kind of the career or some sort of a placement in which they that system thought that I should be in. And I'm curious, do they still do that in schools that are, I mean, K through 6 or not? And or what do you guys do now?
I could not address that specifically for the K through 6, although we've approached working more with the elementary, but most of my attention has strictly been in the secondary. Once again, those, and I remember those cards and stuff, but when we say public safety and security, for example, right now we have a public safety and security academy, but our elementary students and even middle school students think that means being a policeman, or if you're going to go into health care, they think that's either a nurse or a doctor. They still are, they yet to see the big, broad scope of public safety, which is it's huge and it's big and it's broad, and so that's why we need to start at the middle school for sure, and even more so at the elementary level, to start showing that careers in these specific areas are big and broad and available for to all students.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. I'm sure when I shook those cards that the legislator card fell away. I'm sure I don't remember the event, but I remember shaking the cards. Mike Andrews, are you online, sir?
Yes, sir. Chairman Dick and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on Senate Bill 170 and also Senate Bill 199. Last year, Senate Bill 84 was a monumental piece of legislation to provide funding for vocational education in high schools, and these two bills do a good job of following up in areas that need to be addressed. Rick Rios mentioned the Alaska Career Technical Education Plan and Personal Learning and Career Plans, which is part of the state plan that the University of Alaska and school districts and others have agreed to. And also, last year I had the opportunity to serve as a member on the Alaska Advisory Task Force on Higher Education and Career Readiness, where we too emphasized as one of the core areas was career path guidance for students. The career path guidance for students, particularly in middle school and then on through high school, also connects with adult coaching and counseling. And we believed that this would, based on research, would help students achieve success through secondary education into post-secondary and higher education or trade apprenticeship or other vocational careers. So this is the missing link where we can provide resources back in the middle schools to help students get more information and more academic and career planning so they can succeed and advance.
And Mike, my error, would you just for the record identify who you represent, sir?
Okay, I'm with Alaska Works Partnership.
Thank you. Yeah, that was my error. Any questions from committee? Okay. Thank you. Also online, we have Kathleen Castle. And Kathleen, if you'd identify yourself for the record and who you represent. Kathleen, are you online? She dropped off.
Chairman Dick.
Go ahead.
Kathleen Castle had to leave for another appointment. This is John McKinney, Executive Director of the Associate General Contractors.
Very good. John, go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Dick and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, I'm John McKinnon, Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors, and I'm speaking in support of both SB 199 and 170. The Associated General Contractors is a construction trade association representing 650 business members throughout the state. And as you may be aware, the AGC was one of the founding partners and still a state oversight member of the Alaska Construction Academy. It's a very successful program of getting youth and young adults into the construction trades. I'd like to say that these days we don't consider employment in the trades as a job, but as a profession. It's got as much stature as just about anything else that people can go into for their careers. Something that's fundamental and basic in our society today is vocational counseling should be a part of all education and counseling in our public schools. And I wholeheartedly support passage of 199 and 170. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any question from committee? Okay, moving on. We have Diane Maples. Diane, if you're online, identify yourself, please, and who you represent.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Dick and members of the Education Committee. My name is Diane Maples, and I'm wearing two hats today. I work as the statewide Tech Prep Coordinator for the Alaska Tech Prep Consortium, but I'm really here this morning as a parent of four daughters who are at different places in their educational pathways. And for the record, I'd like to, I applaud the efforts of our state legislature and last year's movement in providing funding for CTE instruction for 9 through 12 via the SB 84. I support the additional efforts of SB 199 to extend the use of these funds to reach middle school levels. Furthermore, as a parent, and as in the role that I take as a coordinator, assisting our youth in Alaska to both select and deselect careers by requiring counseling in public schools only helps support my task as a parent in providing guidance and that kind of support for my children to early on take a look at what their opportunities are and make good, solid decisions based on the opportunities that they have wherever they are in Alaska. I concur with Rick Rios as far as the use of the personal learning career plans. I think that we're making great strides in Alaska by taking a look at where our students are and providing them every opportunity to take advantage of career counseling and guidance and the efforts through the CTE plan to provide students that seamless transition from education into the workforce. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Any questions from committee? Okay, I have, believe we've heard from everybody that signed up to testify. I just wonder if there's anybody else in the room that might want to address the issue. Okay, we will close public testimony. And what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move SB 199 version A from committee with the individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
And hearing no objection, SB 199 version A moves from committee with individual recommendations accompanying fiscal note, and I wish all bills were that easy. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease while we do sign. Committee will come back to order. There we go. A little bit of classroom management there. Need Kara Heights to help me out on that one. Okay, we will move on to SB 170, Vocational Ed Counseling in Schools. And Senator Joe Thomas is the sponsor. And Senator Thomas and Murray, would you please identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Senator Joe Thomas, District D, which is the most of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, as well as the Denali Borough. Thank you for hearing SB 70 today, and as you've already heard, the testimony from others was basically for both bills. Hopefully you picked up on that. They did it in a combination, as both bills are so closely aligned. One of the major efforts of our schools is to prepare our children for the workforce. Most of our schools are doing a fairly good job at that. They offer a wide variety of programs to help kids investigate what kind of jobs they want to do when they graduate. Money reestablished for vocational education in SB 184, it is important to make crucial use of that money and ensure students receive the maximum benefit of vocational funding. Not all schools offer a comprehensive vocational counseling program. Senate Bill 170 assures that our young people will have the knowledge they need to make career choices by offering career counseling in the 7th, 9th, and 11th grades. If a school already has a program in place that is not affected by this bill, the bill provides guidance and resources to districts that are not offering a comprehensive program. Focusing kids on their education and potential career is probably more important today than in the past and will be increasingly important going forward. Oftentimes, the student's concept or knowledge of an occupation is not well-founded or based on accurate knowledge or information of a specific career. Student may have a career in mind, but they often are not aware of what they will need and learn to be effective in that career. They see things on TV. They have relatives that do things that they're not really sure what it really amounts to and what is necessary to achieve that career or that profession. The sooner they know what it takes to achieve their goal and the more equipped they are, the better off their vocational success will be. SB 170 begins counseling in 7th grade because that is when students begin to make critical choices. 9th grade is when they start high school, and if they have an idea of what they want to do, they may need help in choosing what courses are necessary to actually complete that education and have the knowledge necessary to be prepared for that career. By 11th grade, they are thinking about graduation and completing coursework for the occupation they have decided to pursue. We don't want our students to miss out on taking the courses that they will need to graduate and take a vocational study and succeed in life. Like I said, many times they're very misinformed of what it actually takes, and kids oftentimes think they're going to drop out of high school at the age of 16 and get a career in construction, and at that point in time, they're ill-prepared to make not only that decision, but actually pursue those careers. As I said, many schools are already offering vocational counseling for all secondary students, but it should be available to students at earlier grades to ensure they understand what education preparation is required to achieve success in a particular vocation. The Department of Education and Early Development has indicated in their fiscal note that they already have the resources they need to carry this out. It is vital that we give our children the tools they need to prepare for the future and to become a productive member of our workforce. The Senate Bill 170 provides this for our students, and I urge you to join me in support of the passage of this bill. I'm here to answer any questions, as well as my aide, Murray Richmond, should you have any. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Question, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Thomas, for being here today. A question on the fiscal note. Can you tell me, the fiscal note indicates that it's zero, that they're, but the language in the bill says that a school district that doesn't currently participate, the Department of Education and Early Development, would have to satisfy the requirements of having the vocational education counseling in those public schools. Can you address why there's a zero fiscal note? And
Well, basically, I have some information, and Murray may follow up. They believe that everything is basically in place at this point in time, and that they will not need to expand the programs because they already are prepared and do it in most of the schools as it is. And they think that through distance, or at least programs that are in place, they can easily transmit or expand it to those that do not require it at this point in time. Murray may have some further information on that regarding his discussions with the department.
Through the chair, my name is Murray Richmond, co-aide to the Senate Education Committee, and in talks with the department, they have a program that's already set that they can deliver to the districts now that deals with student preparation in their careers, as Senator said. So they're ready to go with the plan, and this just allows them to implement it in all the schools.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up. Critically looking at this, you know, we talk about counselors and guidance counselors having these special skills in which to interact with students and try to coach them through this. I don't know what the online system is, but I don't know that an online system can necessarily replace the one-on-one guidance counselor type system, and I'm just cautious by it. You know, when I ask you that question, I'm just curious if it's just a online guidance type thing. You take a little test that tells you this is what you should do versus having an actual person interact with that student. So.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I don't know that I can explain that in detail, but I think that mostly what that represents is the concept that someone else at the school would be using a really relatively simple program to discuss with kids exactly the nature of particular careers and things, not necessarily that the student themselves would be required to understand some program without necessary instruction.
And thanks. Also through the chair, it's more than just a test. It's actually a personal career plan, which you heard talked about earlier, where they're going through a series of paperwork that deals with what their vocational ideas are, what they'd like to see done, what their aims and goals are in terms of vocation. So it's not just the pinprick test that you were talking about earlier, but it's a much more comprehensive program.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to piggyback on to what Scott has just said. The last paragraph on the fiscal note says, in order to ensure this free resource meets the intent of this bill, a review of this available resource by counselors, teachers, advisors would be recommended. What has the department said? Because it goes on to say that probably a specific staff training and to identify how students are given sufficient time and guidance to learn its content. And this review falls under the scope of allowable expenses under the current federal career and technical education funding. So would there be funding from the feds that we could garner so that we could pass this on to the department so that they could make sure that there's adequate training for the teachers that will be providing this?
Through the chair, I believe that that's true, but I would defer to either my aide, who may have had that discussion with the department, to before I assure you that that's the case, and the department to make sure that they would testify in the same manner.
Through the chair, in discussions with the department, they did indicate that they did have all the resources in place to deliver this. We met with them over this bill before we introduced it to make sure that they had those resources, and they assured us that they did have those resources. So I assume there's representatives here that could give you more fuller questions, but that's what we were told when we introduced the bill.
Okay. Thank you. And just right, we have two male voices here, so if you did identify.
Oh, I'm Murray Richmond, co-aide of the Senate Education Committee.
Sometime, not right now, but sometime I'd like to hear from the department on it.
Okay. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, if possible. If I understood the appropriately from the bill that we actually just moved out, is that we were talking secondary, we were from the sponsor statement, I believe, was 6th through 12th. And now we're talking in here starting the counseling at 7th grade. Is there a reason if we potentially may be introducing counseling in the 6th grade that we might wait until the 7th grade to start, or we might be introducing the readiness that we might be waiting until the 7th grade to start the actual counseling and the direction?
Senator Joe Thomas, through the chair, thank you, Mr. Pruitt. I think that we are talking about 7th through 12th in both bills, actually, are in,
okay.
Actually, in the bills, we're talking about 7th and 8th grade. And what already exists in high school at this point in time is the vocational monies for vocational training as well as generally vocational counseling. So, but I think we're starting at 7th grade here, not 6th.
Can I clarify something?
Follow up?
Okay, and maybe that would probably have been just my misunderstanding from what I saw in the sponsor statement of 189. But a question I would have then is, of course, I have a couple middle schools in my area, and of course, it's a 6th through 8th grade.
Right.
Is there any reason why we're not, since we've already got the kids attending those schools with those teachers, introducing them at that point in time?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, to Mr. Pruitt, I believe that they're not precluded from doing that, even though we mentioned in the sponsor's statement the 7th grade as far as people that are decisions that they're making and starting to consider careers. But I don't think the bill actually precludes them from using it in the middle school at 6th grade if they wanted to. Nothing.
Okay.
Through the chair, Murray Richmond again, there is a provision in the bill that the school is already offering a comprehensive vocational education program. This does not supersede that. And if a school would be offering that in sixth grade in a middle school, I think that would be in the spirit of the bill in compliance with the statute.
Okay. And just the last comment I'll make, Mr. Chair, is just, yeah, it just seems to be there's a movement obviously more towards middle school, including sixth grade in that group. So I just figure if they're going to be, you know, part of the group, then we might as well make some of these opportunities available to them as well. So that's just kind of where the line of questioning came from. Thank you, guys.
If I may, through the chair, in statute currently, secondary school is defined as 7th through 12th grades. And so middle schools are a vague area in that. So, but currently statute defines secondary as 7th grade.
Might be something to look at. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had somewhat the same concern that Representative Pruitt was just voicing. I mean, we just went through House Bill or Senate Bill 199 because we had specified some years, and then we're passing another bill to change the number of years. And in this, we specify three particular years. And I guess what I'd like to do is get not only the sponsor but people that testify further whether these three specific years as going to be in statute that every district must do it at that year instead of groups of years, whether it's 6th, 7th, and 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, you know, whatever, whether that reduces flexibility that the local school districts have for their particular programs. So I'm just a little concerned when we're setting out specific years, and also a little discussion on how this works in with the state mandate for work keys and the provisions that, you know, those are taken in 11th grade work keys. So trying to figure out where that and the other vocational requirements that we have, how they meld together. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you.
Through the chair, Murray Richmond, aide for the Senate Education Committee. This bill sets out the minimum standards for vocational education, and unless we wanted to do something that would either cost more money or put an undue burden on the districts, we felt that we should set out those minimal standards. Again, if districts are exceeding that, and most of them are, then that would be a good thing. Seventh grade was chosen because, as one researcher I read said, if life is a thoroughfare, seventh grade is the junction. That is when most kids are making their critical life decisions. And from my former work, working with youth in a church, we changed when we do things from ninth grade down to seventh grade because that was when children are making those critical career choices. Ninth grade is their first year of high school, and that is when they're starting to look at the courses they're taking in high school. At that point, they would also need some guidance. And then 11th grade is the year before they graduate. And if they're really serious about a career at that point, that needs to be where they're going to back up. If we needed to set a minimal set of standards for when they ought to be given career guidance, those seem to be the three most crucial years. Ideally, they should be getting it every year. But in lieu of setting out that they must supply it every year, which might be an undue burden for some districts, we felt that these years would be the most critical. As to work keys, I believe the department should refer to that. We can get that information for you, or they can speak to it.
Representative Seaton.
Well, and I guess what I was concerned was that I think work keys is mandated in the 11th grade, can be taken again after that, but that there was introduction of that in both, I think it was 10th grade and work or key train or win at different levels. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I would just like to do is as testifiers come before us, I'd like to get some relation there to make sure that the 3 years that are specified here actually work conjointly with the requirements we currently have in statute, or whether we need to have a, you know, 6th through 8th, or, you know, so that there is more flexibility there as to either where individual districts are or whether they coordinate with the other requirements that we have in statute. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the department. I would be happy to hear from them, too.
Any other questions from committee? Okay. Thank you. We do have three people in the room that want to testify and one online. Perhaps we could start in the room, Peggy Cowan.
Thank you. For the record, Peggy Cowan, Superintendent of Schools, North Slope Borough School District. Again, Representative Dick, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill and for your work. We support counseling. This bill is a reminder to include regular career counseling in a comprehensive counseling program. The North Slope Borough has individual learning plans for all students, and career goals are in those at the secondary level. Seven of our schools have full-time counselors, primarily funded because of the we're lucky to have National Petroleum Reserve Act grants. Two of our schools have part-time counselors, and two of our schools are not served by any school counselor. So we also appreciate the bill for providing the technical assistance from EED to those schools without school counselors. In terms of some of the questions I just heard about secondary, our schools change year by year in our small schools, depending on where the clumps of the kids are and how students move through. Our largest school system is in Barrow. We have a middle school, which is 6th, 7th, and 8th. The last year in Cully School, for instance, the middle school moved up with the high school, and this coming year we have a bulge at a different area. They're going to move down and be part of the elementary. Sometimes they stand alone. There's in Trapper School at Nuiqsut next year, there's one eighth grader. We've decided in terms of he's going to become a high school student because it fits better there. So in terms of these definitions of grade levels and things, we would invoke flexibility because depending on where students are at what time, the counseling that we provide in our counseling program is done in clusters and around the grade level, depending on how the school is configured, either in terms of which school you're at or in some of the smaller schools in terms of which year we are in the school program.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt, then Representative Kawasaki.
So I just want to touch on that point that you just had there. If you do group, you're at a stage and you've flexed up and you've got your 6th through 8th grade, your middle school. Of course, we're expanding this because the concern was we couldn't utilize some of these monies with the 7th and 8th graders. It was just 9th and 10th. Would it be difficult for you to just only teach two of the three grades there to kind of keep one grade away from the counseling that we're discussing here, or unfortunately 199 is out, but the funding that's there?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Pruitt. On Senate Bill 199, which I spoke to earlier,
right.
that one, yes, we again, because of this flexibility in grade levels and because we try to start early in our individual learning plan, start in elementary and move all the way up, that for the funding, it's important that that we are able to have a comprehensive program and have it and include middle school ages in that for the very reason that you're talking about in terms of flexibility. In terms of the counseling, the counseling will be done depending on which cohort the student is in. So if the student is in a middle school cohort, then the student will get that counseling for the career counseling. That eighth grader that's going to be clustered with the ninth graders and going to be differentiated instruction, my sense would get the ninth grade counseling at that time because he's in that cluster. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Superintendent. The question goes to question that I had a little bit earlier is how it would work in a rural school district, in the school district where you've got lots of different high schools, And then specifically in the bill, it deals with 7th graders, 9th graders, and 11th graders. I just want to make sure that I have an understanding of how it will work if there's not a guidance counselor in that school, because I want to make sure that, kids have access to, counselors, obviously. That's the purpose of the bill, and then are not specifically relying on, you know, some sort of electronic means to get the same sort of, counseling for career or for voc ed training. So can you address how that would work as far as a, big rural school?
Through the chair, and to Representative Kawasaki's question, I have not seen that fiscal note that was described. So I am speaking in generalities. Again, we have a we have individual learning plans that have career goals, and those are dealt with students in the schools without counselors, with their teachers, rather than with a counselor, because they don't have counselors. And my understanding from the language that was in here was that the department would be providing technical assistance. And what I heard from the fiscal note that I haven't seen was that it sounds like that those would be some resources we would take advantage of. But no, we don't have a counselor. We're cutting our funds. We're not adding travel. So the small schools that don't have counselors don't have counselors. I mean, they don't.
Just to follow up,
The
fiscal note that I just saw today is zero. It's a zero fiscal note, so there's no fiscal impact to the state. And the comments under the comments from the department are that there's currently web-based career guidance for students, and that available to all citizens of the United States. And when the department comes up, we'll probably get a little bit more clarification on what that means. But I want to make sure that if we're saying that school districts should provide career and school guidance at specific times and dates, that they're not slighted because you don't have a guidance counselor in your school, right? And I want to make sure that you have those, if you need those assets, that you have those assets available to you.
Thank you.
So,
through the chair, I'm not going to say that the students in the schools that don't have counselors get the same services that the students in the schools that have full-time counselors do. They don't.
Right.
I mean, I wish they did, but they don't. And as I say, we're looking at cutting our budgets, and actually counselors were on the list. Again, we're fortunate because we are on the North Slope. We do have NPRA grants, and we're funding three counselors through NPRA grants next year instead of general fund. But NPRA is going down, too. I share your passion and interest, but we are not going to add counselors at this juncture to the schools that don't have counselors. And but we will continue to have career goals. We will, you know, continue to include them and with their teachers in the, you know, our career education program and plans. But they don't have counselors, and they don't get the same services as schools that have counselors.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at your district, the 11th grade career and vocational counseling and the requirement for work keys to be administered, would you interpret this as administering work keys would fulfill the requirement for career and vocational counseling, or how is that going to interact with your interpretation of what you would need to provide in the 11th grade?
Again, we need to get reading and looking through the chair. But short answer, no. I don't think giving a test and even getting the feedback from the test, you know, is career counseling. I think certainly we want to be data-based in our career counseling and use resources. So working with the students when they get their work key, you know, scores back and incorporating goals, you know, from work keys and careers, again, in the individual learning plans that each student has would be part of it. But I would see career counseling as a broader program. We actually have a comprehensive, you know, school counseling program guide that we're working with for all of our schools. We have wonderful partners on the North Slope. So part of within that plan, we have the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and the borough go out with their staff to do career workshops with students in all of our villages. And But then the actual counseling is individual with students and then is further individualized through the individual learning plans. So it would be those kind of activities that I would see would be career counseling. Again, using the resources of WorkKeys, but not but administering the WorkKeys and providing the score, does not fit the definition in our district of career counseling itself.
Representative Seaton.
I don't know whether you use WIN or Key Train or any of those programs to coordinate with WorkKeys, but in the development of your individual career plans, I might have the name wrong. I'm trying to figure out what this means for career counseling in 7, 9, and 11. Would your interpretation in your district be that the creation of the career plan and the ongoing involvement or evolving of that would take care of these requirements, or is this going to be an additional separate requirement from your individual career plans? I'm trying to find out exactly what your interpretation of what the bill would require you to do.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Seaton. Exactly. I mean, we will need to work out the specifics. In our comprehensive counseling program, there's five domains. Career, I can't remember them all, but career is one of them. And so this bill would be a reminder to make sure that at least at 7, 9, and 11, in the counseling program in the North Slope Borough School District, that we had career counseling, targeted at those levels, and that I think it's an important responsibility of a school district to take state statute and state regulation and work them into the plans of the district, so people like the teachers and the counselors are not serving two masters. They can't be on this side doing what the district is telling them to do and then have another book over here doing a checklist for making sure what the state wants them to do. So we would definitely take this, study it and make sure we understand it, and we would move it into the district requirements. We would be certainly responsible to the state's mandates, but we would not it would be invisible to the teachers where it came from. It would simply, and the counselors, it would be, this is part of our counseling program in the North Slope Borough School District, and we have periodic career testing at the second, career counseling at the secondary level, and then would look at these resources from the state, look at the current counselors, and see how it's done and make sure that we were fulfilling the intent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions from committee? Okay, we do have two other people in the room that want to testify, one online, and we could call for the department representative to speak to the fiscal note after a bit. Perhaps Bruce Johnson?
Good morning again. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. It's our sense that you cannot have a comprehensive, well-articulated career tech program without the counseling component. There has to be kind of bring this down to earth, and I think this bill is an attempt to do that, and I'll try to answer some of the more specific questions, recognizing that I've been away from the superintendency for 12 years now, but I have been, in the last 12 years, I've actually worked and spent at least one night in 48 of our 53 school districts. So I've seen a lot of what goes on in classrooms, because often my hotel was somewhere in the school. So it's a grand experience for me, and I appreciate the fact that Alaska has a very complex system, which you guys are identifying today as a committee. I think of when you talk about equivalent, Representative Kawasaki talking about how does it differ from having a counselor right there for you It is different. It's different if you are a child who needs speech and language assistance, and that is provided by itinerant who shows up once a month, and you have hopefully somebody that's capable of carrying that training on under the supervision and direction. But that's our system. We can't really afford a system that goes much beyond that, even though we may all like that. I appreciate the fact that the department and our organization appreciates that the department is stepping up and is willing to assist school districts that may not have any kind of program right now or have a program that needs to be shored up. So none of us are going to resist the responsibility that we have here to prepare kids for a career. I think at least in the four decades that I've been in education, we've had some sort of career education. It is morphed to what we have today, which I think is a whole lot better, less ambiguous. We're going to all go out and work. That's what every parent dreams for their children, that eventually they're going to get a job. So we share in that responsibility to get that right. I think Senate Bill 170 recognizes the fact that some school districts are doing a great job right now, have a comprehensive program. We should let that move forward. It's not this bill's intent, as we understand it, that they would supersede and suggest that we do something else. Obviously, we would always be open to how to improve what we're doing. So it's a broader bill from that perspective. Regarding work keys, through the chair, Representative Seaton was addressing work keys, and I've been away from that for a little while, but the WIN curriculum is available. Some districts are using it. They find that helpful. But again, I think like several of you have stated this morning, that doesn't just going through that curriculum kind of in a rote way is not going to get the job done. You're going to have a human being helping sort some of that out. And it will probably end up in our small schools being classroom teachers. That's our reality again, whether we'd love to have that specialist, and hopefully whether it's the department or somebody at the district level can help articulate that and pave the way so that it's not a tremendous burden. But kids are interested in this stuff and looking forward to a future. So this will take us the next step for those districts that are not doing it. I don't think there's a significant burden here. And if you are going to have a comprehensive CTE program, which we advocate for in our joint position statements, this has to be part of it. And we're willing to roll up our sleeves and work with the department to make this happen.
Thank you. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. I appreciate that. And from the testimony that I'm hearing, it's mainly that an individual career plan is the actuality of where we're trying to get to. And I'm wondering whether the providing education and vocational education and training counseling to students in grades 7, 9, and 11 gets us there. How are different districts going to go to addressing deliver vocational educational training and counseling, and what does that mean, and is that specific enough for districts to actually know that we're wanting them to develop a individual career plan for each student, or is that something that needs to be left up to the district level to interpret this wording as meaning that it's really important and each student's important and needs to have that done, or do we need to be more specific in what we want generated?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it's a great question. I believe the way this bill is written now, it's broad enough that you're going to have a variety of interpretations. What our superintendents will experience in late July is we meet for a day and a half with the Department of Education. And one of the reasons that we meet in July with the Department of Education is to get a department interpretation on any legislation that is impacting us, any changes in legislation, so forth and so on. So ultimately, I think the department will set some parameters, you know, through the work of the legislature, that as a minimum, here's what you need to do. The minimum is 7, 9, and 11 in this particular bill. I can't imagine that most districts would only do it then. If you're going to do it at all, you do it on a continuous basis, and it's not this that you're going to dip in every couple years. It'll have, in order to be effective, you'll have to do it in that way. So my sense is that, yes, to have this highly personalized individual career plan is where we want to go. I think we would all agree that every student should have an individual learning plan as well. But if you're a high school teacher dealing with, you know, 150 or 180 kids a day, how do you get that job done and do everything else that's there? So certainly we would not necessarily want that as a parameter, even though that may be where we're going. The fact is that may not work particularly well in some districts. So keep it broad. Focus our energy and attention on career development, I think, is appropriate for today.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just kind of, you know, we've got a record here we're building of what our expectations are and what we, where we think we're going, and what legislative interpretation of this means. And so it seems to me that the reason we're having to deal with these things is because they haven't been dealt with by all districts in a way that is effective across our student population in the state. So I guess I'm very supportive of the bill. My questions are making sure that we have flexibility to accomplish something and that we do accomplish something, and it seems to be that individual career plans are the accomplishment we're trying to get to, so that it's brought down to the individual level. So I appreciate when you go forward and have these conversations with the administration that, and hopefully next year you'll come back and tell us what you decided is the interpretation of vocational education and training counseling, so that we know what your decisions are. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Bruce. In the room also is Barbara Huff-Tucknitz. And Barb, if you'd come forward and identify yourself for the record. And we have one more online. Suzanne Armstrong got back online. So, Barbara, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Tucknitz, Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And I have the rare occasion, unlike my friend back here, John Alcantara, in spending much time before your committee. And honestly, sitting here this morning and listening to the testimony, this committee is probably one of the most important committees in the legislative process, because you do ultimately make decisions that affect each and every one of our kids, grandkids, that goes through ultimately a hopefully great and wonderful school system that we have established. And you make usually that initial call that gets the blessing of the rest of the committees as it moves through the process, and for that I thank you. I also want to thank Senator Thomas and Senator Meyer. Senator Meyer, with respect to Senate Bill 199, and thank you for moving that one out. Also go on record supporting Senate Bill 170. Probably wondering why the Teamsters are here. Again, from a voc educational perspective, and unfortunately our training trust director, John Lovedahl, is traveling, not able to actually testify here. We have, through either our logistics, our technical engineer training, commercial driver's license, where we have over-the-road freight, as well as many other industries, our training trust, of course, does focus on some of those more technical, professional categories or classifications out there. What we have seen over the years, and I should probably also add, we have contributions from our Teamster employers through negotiated collective bargaining agreements that average between $1.2 and $1.3 million a year that go into our training trust. We have sometimes limited funds
So the less amount of time that we have to spend in actually bringing these students that come into our programs up to par, and I'll talk about math. Math for our tech engineers, our surveyors out there is very, very important. If those students are able to bring those particular skills to the classroom through our VOTEC, it actually helps reduce our cost and reduce our employer cost out there as well. So for those reasons and all the reasons that have been testified to earlier this morning, we'd like to support both of these bills, and we thank you for your effort in hearing the bills and moving them through today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Thank you, Barbara. Okay, we do have Suzanne Armstrong online. Suzanne, if you're there, identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning again, Chairman Dick and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Suzanne Armstrong, and I am the president of the Associated Builders and Contractors of Alaska. I was able to testify on Senate Bill 199 earlier this morning, and actually my testimony contained also a testimony regarding Senate Bill 170. So for the sake of brevity and to save committee time, I'd just like to reiterate that ABC of Alaska supports the passage of Senate Bill 170. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have a representative from the Department of Education to come forward, maybe answer questions on the fiscal note? Or any other questions?
Good morning, Chair Dick, members of the committee. For the record, Cynthia Curran, Director of Teaching and Learning Support, Department of Education and Early Development. First off, I would like to speak to Representative Wilson's question about the federal funding. The funding that is referred to in the fiscal note is Carl Perkins Vocational Funding. And as with all federal funding, there is the caveat of supplementing, not supplanting. So that while we can use some of the funding to help with the technical assistance for this, we cannot use all of that funding because that would be supplanting what the state is responsible for. So yes, we can, but we can't use a huge amount of money for it.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several, a series of questions. That are right, is that right if I just do it?
On
okay.
A roll.
First of all, I would like to know how many schools, I mean, a lot of the schools are already doing this, and I'd like to know what school districts are doing them and which ones aren't. And there are several school systems. And I guess this kind of overlaps a little bit with the with House Bill 199 also. There's a lot of school systems that are doing work keys or the, what was the other one?
E-train.
Yeah, which ones, if any, are doing it now? I know there's several that are, and I'd like to kind of know which school districts are doing it and which school districts are not, which will give me an indication of the ones that have funding that they feel like they can do it now and which ones just can't because maybe they're smaller schools or whatever. I don't, for whatever reason, they can't. So I'd kind of like to know which schools have developed some kind of a program so that the kids will know where they're headed. And another question is that are you going to have enough funds available to really do the teacher training that is necessary so that the schools that aren't doing it will be able to do it? Because I know some of the school districts that may be small, there's not going to be a very big amount of money going to that because we're using it's through the formula, and so I realize that if it's a small school, they're not going to get very much. If it's a big school, they'll get quite a bit. And so I'd like to know which ones are lacking, and then if you as a department will be able to handle the ones that don't have it now so that you can provide that instruction for them.
Through the chair, I'd like to just clarify what I heard first. You want to know, you asked about school districts that were already doing counseling, first off, mm-hmm. and then you asked about which now, districts.
I want to clarify. Career counseling.
Thank you. And then you mentioned which were doing work. He's in key train.
Or
anything.
Well, I know that there's a program that we've got going that, and I can't remember. One was Keys and the other one was, well, let me go back to my notes
Wynn.
Here. Wynn. Yeah. And so that they're doing something that is at least as effective that you feel like that they're, you know, that they're getting something of that sort.
Through the chair, thank you. You did ask about funds for teacher training, and as the department looked at this bill and looked at what we could provide, we thought about how we're moving to doing more technical assistance. And one of the things that we're doing is using more technology and doing webinars. We have the capability to archive those webinars so that they could be accessed on demand. So as we envision it, it would be that kind of technical assistance. And when people need it, we could call together groups of people on a webinar, or they could just access it in their own time. And that is how we envisioned providing this technical assistance.
Okay. Follow up?
One other question. The other day we found out that some of the schools don't have the bandwidth, and so they can get a video, but not with the audio with it. And so is there technology that you could send them a can something or other out to them so that they could do it then? I mean, I don't know how that works, so.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we can put it on a CD and send it out so that they would have it forever and always.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah. It has to do with the fiscal note and the discussion surrounding the delivery. Because in Section 2, Section 2 outlines that the districts, the individual districts are going to or shall request that the department provide the assistance. And then in Section 1 of the bill, the department's responsibility is to provide the additional resources and technical assistance that result in the delivery of the counseling. So it's got a zero fiscal note. It's going on to Finance Committee next, and I don't want to hold the bill up. I'd like to see it, the two bills pass together as a package. But I just want to make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for a potential where some school districts that obviously have the counseling available, there's some school districts that don't. I just want to make sure that there is, I think appropriately, there should be funding attached to this bill. So that's just more of a comment than a question.
Any other comment or question from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little concerned when we say vocational education and training counseling, if we're just talking about, you know, having a counselor talk to a group of 30 kids in a room and, okay, we had our day, we check off the box and we're gone. And it seems like that almost every district we hear from that is effectively implementing, you know, career planning is using an individual career plan. And so, you know, I would be concerned if we, with just the identification that there has to be some counseling, and then there's not really integration of that into the individual student. So what I would like to do is see if the department can, in next year's report to the legislature, let us know how many districts and which districts are implementing individual career plans in their to accomplish this goal. And I presume from what we heard from the Superintendent's Association that there will be a meeting with the department to go over what those expectations are for satisfying this vocational education and training counseling. And I'd be interested to also have the report back as to what the department has interpreted this bill to mean and how that will be accomplished in the district. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Well, it just seems to me that this is an excellent bill, and we really do want to support it and move it. But at the same time, it seems to me just a few questions that it would probably do us well if we just hold this bill, but perhaps until Wednesday, and we just have a chance to just take a look at some of the notes and whatnot on this. So we will close public testimony, the intent will be to hear this bill on Wednesday again, and to move it on if all of our questions have been asked and answered. So, on Wednesday, March 28, 8 a.m., we will hear a presentation by the Lower Kuskokwim School District, HB 320, Education Loan Repayment Program, sponsored by Representative Kawasaki, and bills previously heard, including this one. And with no further business before us at this time, we are adjourned at 9:50.